All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy. We'd love you to support this show. Please like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Your likes and subscription helps us to grow and attract interviews and content. So please retweet and share our posts. Your contributions are appreciated.
All right, so welcome to the show, Bill Phelps, Austin Newland, Ronnie Parker. If you're joining us on Saturday morning, we're doing the Thursday show this week because I'm busy Saturday. Got Marcus Almighty Mark and 69th Blizzard Ken. And we're going to get back to doing the new feature. I haven't finished the intro sequence to it yet, but it's What's in the Box. So what new stuff have either of you gotten recently? Mark, you haven't gotten anything, so I'll go straight to Ken.
Yeah, well, I didn't get something new. I found that I was going through one of my old boxes, and I found something from 1979 that I bought off the magazine stand, and it was the giant Kiss poster book, and it has four posters. And when I found it, I the posters weren't in it. I was like, did I keep the posters? And I kept searching and searching, and I found them. So inside, you had the four different, here's one, another one. Let's see. So for instance, here's one. I had them, I was looking at them, and they all have pin marks in them and tape on them. But they're still in relatively good shape. So here's a
Gene, of course. First out of the gate there.
The Gene one, yeah. That's the Gene one. I mean, they're all
those are the early boots, aren't they?
They're on, when was that the early boots? Yeah.
Didn't he go back to those regular style boots at one point for Dynasty? Or was that Unmasked that he did that? I don't remember.
They're touring.
Hey, Oberheim.
They survived. Yeah. Superhero.
Look at my arms.
Ace and stuff. I'm not gonna pull them. But
we know Peter Criss is the winner of the
poster. Yeah, he has the the fluffy stuff going on. You can see part of it here.
Does that have the lion's heads, doesn't it, on there? Isn't it?
On his head, it's on his shoulder.
Nice.
And the hair going down the sides of his arms. So that was something, and I mean it's pretty cool. I mean, it has some cool other stuff in there and pictures, all Dynasty era stuff. I mean, the rest of it is mostly just a few pages of this or that. It's okay.
Yeah.
So that was a box that had a bunch of magazines and stuff. So
don't you love it when that happens?
Next time,
an old box and find something stuff else. Like that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it in a while. I mean, I bought it when it came out in 79. So,
yeah. Hey, David Donnelly.
Probably a tower.
Do you want to do an email for him over the show?
Oh, by the way, David, I'm awaiting your file. So whenever you're ready, send that over.
Waiting for your file.
We're working on a song. It's kind of hush hush.
You must send Monday money first.
All right, all in good time. All right, I got a few things this week that came in. Some of the old Ace Frehley Rock Soldiers mags. I got number 8. I already had that, but number 6, Golden Gate Bridge. Been there. Everyone stands there. Number 9.
Put it more in the center. There you go. Thanks.
Yeah, right in front of your face.
And
okay.
Number 7. Very
cool. Okay.
Number 7. And what was cool that came with them was an old video catalog from 1995. So it was cool to look back at some of the stuff that was, popular back at that time and was being sold by the various dealers. Also got, and this is really weird because I don't usually buy these, but I do love including them in the book, and I'll be including these scans in Magic for the show. So a bunch of concert tickets.
Oh, nice.
I got all back of them, which basically span late August and through McNichols in Denver.
Nichols Arena. Wow.
Yeah. So those, I'm building up an envelope with the ones that I'm actually scanning.
Nice.
Which will go into when I do eventually finish Magic, the copies that I sell signed from my website will come with a little bookmark of a ticket stub. So
that's cool.
You know, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I did that. That is a good idea. For On Tour, I put a whole bunch of ticket stubs, all coin original memos and finance sheets, and no one ever noticed or said anything about them. It was hilarious to a certain extent. Is that they were real. Everything that I, it wasn't photocopies. It was all like legitimate.
Wow.
That's cool.
You know, including some newsprint ads. So just cool stuff to do. One last thing, Australia. I'd wanted to replace this for years. And just a press sheet, fold out flyer from the Aussie reunion tour and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, wow. You got a lot of good stuff.
I love that sort of stuff. comes in very handy when you're doing a book on the reunion era. So that's it. We're doing some board topics after the quiz. I want to thank everyone who managed to stay tuned in with our technical issues. Thanks again to Daniel for the effort that he made putting that together and translating all the questions. When you're live, things don't always go as they should. This week, we're going to just be doing some board topics because there are a few things and a few other podcasts have had some good topics this week.
News.
I think first and foremost is, you know, three sides, you know, and Mark mentioning that things are moving along in the Pop House world for potential musical announcements in March. I think he said release, but I'm not sure if that's accurate. And frankly, it doesn't matter
in
context. Yeah, well, I think if it was going to be released in March, it'd be on order now.
Yeah.
Just because of the time.
Maybe the order date will be then, yeah.
Yeah, so either way, new stuff is coming. And he said that the off-the-board soundboard series was going to be picking up again. And people immediately started taking guesses about what that off-the-soundboard title is, what it should be, what it might be, and what it clearly will never be. Ken, Cadillac came into the picture today. Would you like a Cadillac 1975 off the soundboard?
I would, but I'd never heard that there was any tape out there or anything available. There's just like these little snippets, I guess, have been posted. But that would be a huge thing. And also, you know, with the 50th anniversary coming up, I guess, in October of Cadillac. That experience, I mean, if they do have one, if there is one possibility of one, that would be the time to release it right at the 50th anniversary of Cadillac.
Yeah, that would be a real cool, just a standalone release for off the soundboard. I started posting audio clips from it, and it's not a soundboard, it's an audience recording on the FAQ. And those are just go listen to the Cadillac documentary on Kissology. You want to hear some Cadillac? There's an audience recording that was used as part of that documentary, so you get to hear Hotter Than Hell. We love you, Cadillac, and then Goodnight at the end of Rock and Roll All Night is there. I would have thought with Kissology being an official product, well, actually it was a Kiss product, not a Universal product. So who knows what is in the vault, if there is even anything from that. Mark, Cadillac. And what are your thoughts on off the soundboard? What should be, you got to pick a tour, you got to pick a show, you got to pick a lineup. What's it going to be if you're the decider?
Well, at this point, I'd be happy with anything to come out, as you know. But, you know, I think if there was a Cadillac show, that'd be very interesting. Hopefully it would be better than, you know, the sort of audience. I always said they always sound like cement mixers, those audience recordings, right? But, that depends how they're recorded. But, the Cadillac one would be very interesting, obviously, for historical reasons and the importance of that show and what it did for the band. I wouldn't be opposed to it. Hopefully with technology, they can maybe clean it up and make it sound really nice. If I could pick anything, I know this might fall into the impossible category, but hey, if I can pick anything, how about a show from early on, like the first tour, I know that they played a burlesque club here in Toronto on their very first tour. I forget what it's called, the name of that
Victory
place.
Victory Theater, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. Hmm. So maybe get nerd. That.
Yeah.
I remember it because I do this live stream. Ken sometimes comes to it at night with Patrick and the guys. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Gass, one of the guys who frequents it there, he's a longtime Toronto guy who's even saw like Zeppelin in the early days and stuff like that. So he remembers seeing Kiss at that show. He was at that theater show for Kiss and said that it was absolutely fantastic. So it would be great to hear something like that on a, you know, off the board, which I don't know if they were recording stuff that early. Maybe they did, but who knows, right?
Yeah, there were a few decent boards from 74 and first tour. Mm-hmm. Detroit is the preeminent one and remains that way. What else is there? There's Lafayette music. Can't remember which city.
Louisiana? Memphis. Lafayette, yeah. Louisiana?
That's Memphis.
A different one? Okay.
Yeah, it's California. The name of the venue. Yeah, someone did a retransfer of that radio reel in like 2015. It sounded way better than the old circulating bootleg. It ends with Acrobat as well. Mm-hmm. But again, that stuff's all been out. I need something to blow my mind. So I don't have any preference over tours. I'm very uninterested in a live tour because that was kind of a generally mostly static set. There were some, you know, Ladies in Waiting comes in and out. Mm-hmm. And Strutter is in and out, and there may have been one or two other songs. But for the most part, we've got Alive for the Alive tour. So why do anything with that? Titania nails it. Palladium, New York.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be a good one.
Eric Carr's first show. That's historic. Yeah. That's a short-lived lineup. And who knows if they recorded it? They were talking about doing either a King Biscuit Flower Hour with that show or doing a telephone feed or taking the cassette up to Chom, the radio station not far from you, I believe. That's also
true.
So around the time, but obviously that never happened or we would have it. So that would be a good one. Obviously, Asylum Tour would be a good one for me. Revenge would be a good one.
Revenge,
you know, pretty much you can give me any tour if it's got an unusual song, if it's got an odd set list, or if it's got something interesting happening. I'll take any of the above.
You know, I got to ask you one thing, though, Julian. You mentioned something that kind of triggered a question to me. You said that you didn't want to pick this particular tour, for example, because the set list was very static. Out of older tours they've done, what tour do you think they fluctuated the songs the most in? What tour did they do that more often in?
Oh, God, I don't know, because we're always finding out new things about the tours. Creatures Tour had a lot of fluctuation, but it was mostly in the wrong direction. It was a shrinking set list and songs from the album dropping off. Lick It Up, you know, I think probably 2/3 of that album did get performed live. Animalize, I would take Brighton if they had a soundboard for that, because it's got Burn, Bitch, Burn and Get All You Can Take, I think, for the one and only performances. I was listening to some Crazy Nights audience recordings last week, and one had Hell or High Water, and the other had When Your Walls Come Down. So there's a lot, because that's we don't crazy. Know all the set lists, I can't answer that, because most of the tapes that we have come from shows which were kind of samey.
Yeah, because it almost seems like they have different sets at the beginning, and then as the set tour goes on, they kind of ditch stuff and then keep it static the rest of the way through.
Yeah. Look, Ken's here. Ken, what do you think? What would you like?
I mean, I'm like you. I like most anything. Imagine, I mean, there's so many, thousands, I don't know how many shows they've played over their career, but there's got to be a lot. Out there, you would think there would be a lot available, and maybe we just don't know it. But yeah, I would like 92 club tour, you know, San Francisco. I wouldn't mind a good Hot in the Shade soundboard. You know, there's so many different ones. So yeah, I'd be happy with most anything.
Yeah, I used to be pretty adamant that I didn't want any show to be released that we already had an audience recording or video, audience filmed video from. I was like, I don't want it. And then Des Moines comes out and we had that. But the soundboard had stuff that wasn't on the circulating audience recording. So it just kind of proves, you know, 2001, the Tokyo show as well. We had that from the webcast for donkey's years, but the sonic improvement on it was also very beneficial. I do not want anything that is off the sound, not off the soundboard, concert live. So anything that was the Thayer Singer 2004 lineup, I think that's done and dusted. Forget it. Not interested. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything off concert, anything after 2008 is worth releasing, to be perfectly honest, with the decrease in Paul's vocal ability. Oh. I was listening back to some of those, and you can just hear the struggle starting. I don't want to celebrate Kiss by having to make excuses about any of the performance.
Tiger Stadium, of course, you know.
Well, a properly produced, if they had properly recorded Tiger Stadium rather than, you know, the video feed, I would love them to have done more with that than just throw it out there with Kissology. And maybe they do have an audio source.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they
go back and think really they would treat it. But yeah, Super Zapper, great one there. Dynasty,
that'd be good.
With all the solo songs.
Yeah.
You know,
that'd be great.
There were some good, there were a couple of Dynasty soundboards that surfaced because of that. So, you know, there we go. There's so many options. There's so many different opinions. You're not going to make everyone happy no matter what they choose. Mm-hmm. But I think just it existing and starting again is a victory of sorts. That's something worth celebrating to me. We've had a year of drought. So if you overset your expectations, you're just going to let yourself down. Like, they're going to come out with something. Well, Mark upsold it. Hopefully, I know what it is, but hopefully it does meet expectations.
I think most of the people figured out probably what it's probably going to be. But, you know, who knows? But I'm excited for the new updated website, you know, that they're...
Oh, they're doing that, yeah.
Yeah, they're relaunching that in March. So,
oh, nice.
Hopefully, there's no quirks with it or any bugs. Hopefully, they tested it properly beforehand. But you know, I don't think it would be very difficult to make it better than that site that they've had for so many years.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely not expecting it to be like Neil Young's musical archive website.
Yeah.
When's the last time you were on Kiss Online?
I was on actually a few days ago, but I was more in at the store more than the actual. Yeah, I was looking for shirts and stuff like that, and they still actually had they have the Elder picture disc still actually available from last time I saw. So there is still stuff available, but T-shirts are the main thing I'm looking for. Yeah,
or the color disc.
No, the picture disc they had on there.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, I saw it on there. That's not long ago. But anyways, I haven't actually perused the actual website that long ago. I mean, I did here and there when they were touring, but not really lately. I just go mainly to the store. Is there something that I've been missing on the website itself? Or
I don't know.
The new Valentine's merch?
Oh, yeah, the Valentine's merch.
Don't they have like a swanky bathrobe or something like that? Like a Valentine's Day one?
Yeah.
Everybody needs one of those.
It's nice Hugh Hefner style robe.
Get your pipe out and the bathroom.
It comes with a Kiss pipe.
Ah, there you go. That's right up for Julian's alley there. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I need a pipe, all right.
So
what was the other thing from Three Sides of the Coin was, of course, that we reveal what Kiss is releasing in 2025, box sets. Well, it's already been mentioned that there are going to be box sets this year, and everyone already realizes that Universal in the past has stuck to anniversaries, so by decade or half decade. So you can do the math and see which ones you think are most likely in 2025. Okay. And Mark then went on to say that one was going to be announced or on sale in March, which obviously leads people to think, what's the anniversary that's occurring in March? Well, until it's announced, I really always like to say, and it may seem pompous, and I'm sorry if it does, things change. Things happen. Things what may be at the time that a show is recorded be taken as fact, or a strong rumor may change the following day. Mm. So I hate to sound like a corporate, you know, talking head and say, wait for official announcements. But in this case, you know, there's Pop House, there's Universal, and how those entities interact and make announcements. Because once you steal the excitement away from an announcement, it's kind of hard to get back. Now, Kiss Online has been finally celebrating 50th anniversaries of milestones. And yeah, that is one. They do it more on Instagram and socials, because that just seems to be where they're more geared towards an audience these days. And that is one thing I am very happy to see. I'm very happy to see some of the things that are being celebrated. Obviously, I drop my little videos for moments this year. I'm trying to do those. What was the last one? Oh, yeah, I threw out the one I did last year, for February the 8th, debut date. Yeah. I'd forgotten to publish that last year, so I just hit publish on it. That was a year old. I already had 300.
It's been in the cans for a year, like the box set.
I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about that. So that one came out. I'm working on a short episode now for June for the start of the 30th anniversary of the U.S. convention tour, or North American, pardon me, Mark. And then there's a demo story dropping in a few days. So, you know, I'm trying to do it, but I'm so glad to see Kiss doing it, because that is the official voice of Kiss. So it's good to say something nice about Kiss Online. Good job. Yeah. Keep it up.
Yeah.
So what do you think the box is going to be, Ken? From all the intel Mark gave you, what do you think it is?
Some of the intel of Mark gave me and what Kiss Online has provided in their, you know, their little post, I think we're going to see something either, you know, Dressed to Kill and the obvious 50th, and that's 50th anniversary, and the other 50th anniversary this year is later this year in September is Alive, which you'd have to be stupid not to take advantage of a 50th anniversary, you know, box set, to, you know, making that and putting it out for people to buy, because I think that'll sell like hotcakes.
But what do you think is going to be in this box, like the debut one? What do you think is going to be in it? And just for clarity, when they say Mark said it, they're not talking about me. They're talking about Mark Cecchini, okay?
Well, in it, Mark, there's the thing that, for instance, Julian had posted that showed the music. It showed some demos that they recorded. For instance, like Gene Simmons Burning Up with Fever.
Yeah.
Back then, I mean, you know, a few years before the solo album, you know, so.
Yeah. That was the, you know, I posted the Larrabee.
4 years before.
And there were four songs recorded. And for anyone who hasn't watched that, shame on you. I put a lot of effort into it. go check it out. That's right. But basically, they recorded four demos. Burning Up with Fever, Mistake, Anything for My Baby, and Rockin' All Night in January 75 when they were in California on a break in the tour. So one would think that for a March release, those would have to be included if they are picking up the 50th anniversaries. After that, I'm not sure what there is. I mean, it becomes a mess because I don't know what's in the vaults. I know the sorts of things that I would hope to be there, but, you know, have to wait and see. There's a lot of stuff I didn't know was going to be on the Creatures box that blew my mind. I just want to be happy. I want to smile.
Yeah.
I want to hold that thing and to say, I'm really happy that this is here. It's not perfect, or it's as perfect as it could be. Or look at the pretty pictures. Oh, Chalk Keys. Well, you know, the excitement of opening up a box set by Kiss, the band I love.
That's,
you can put a price on it. And that's what I'm worried about. Ken?
Yeah. The thing is, now that I don't think it's going to be, you know, Kiss, the first album, though they probably were working on it last year, but they missed the anniversary of that, so you can't really do a 50th of that, so they might wait for 55 for that, or 65. Yeah, I that's what I'm thinking, because they missed
a lot of people. They missed not the on 50th. This planet
they missed the 50th, unless they want to do it. I mean, they could do it if this year, but it'd be a year late.
Been invaded by Greenland by then.
Yeah. So I mean, if I'm at waiting until 60 years old is a little bit too long because you're going to lose a lot of the Kiss Army.
There won't be
the
any
supporters. There won't be around here to buy it anymore.
Geriatric Army.
Who knows what the world's going to be like at then? But I hope they don't wait. If they've already done a lot of the work on something like that, I would hope it would come.
But Ken, you keep forgetting one important thing. This is Kiss we're talking about. They'll celebrate the 50th the year later. That they always do that.
Well,
kind of
this
stuff.
Way, that, so,
Kiss yeah. Bath is as bad as Julian.
Yeah. Right?
So maybe you exactly, get a third. Maybe you get three box sets this year. You know, I don't know.
You don't have. You can put out, get it out early. Anniversary product anytime you want. You don't have to wait for that year.
Yeah.
You know,
as you just can call it an anniversary edition. You don't have to put a number on it, right?
Anniversary.
It's edition. Okay. 51st anniversary. Just call it anniversary edition. You don't have to say the number.
You're just getting.
Could be, you know, 3 month anniversary.
It'll be anti-semantic.
Yes.
Okay, Gene.
All right. So we all agree that we don't care what it is as long as there's something.
Yes.
All right. There we go. All right. So Podcast Rock City, the Mighty Joe Polo and crew, had an episode this past week. Are Gene and Peter's solo albums bad? We always go over these.
There they
kind of questions about the solo albums, and here's the first part of the question: what's the last solo album that you listened to by a member of Kiss?
Mark. Paul. I actually listened to Paul the other week. I was going through my vinyl collection and sorting them again because I've been going through my Discogs, and I pulled out the Paul one and listened to it. I have a really nice Japanese one of that and listened to that, and I love it. I think that to me is still a 10 out of 10 album, in my opinion.
What about you, Ken? Which Gene solo album did you listen to?
I listened to the 78 Gene solo album not too long ago. And I posted on that thread about that. And I said when I bought those albums, I enjoyed Gene's from the very beginning. Peter's, I liked part of it, but over the years, it's grown on me more and more. I like it a lot more than I did back in 78. I like it, you know. I think it's pretty darn good, actually. The other thing is, they talk about this, you know, Gene's was everyone was expecting God of Thunder, you know, that kind of music and stuff like that from him. And I wrote down, Gene could have sequenced the album and had a heaven side and a hell side. So put all the, yeah. And I listed the songs, my list. So I would start off with the hell side. So it wouldn't, you know, piss off people too much. They get what they're getting radioactive and burning up with fever and so on, the harder stuff. And then the second side would be, you know, it would lead off with Tunnel of Love as the lead off the second side, but then the rest of it is going to be, you know, Always Near You, Nowhere to Hide, Mr. Make Believe, and all that stuff. So I put, what was that? Seeing Your Dreams as number 5 track on side one. So anyway, I thought, you know, it might have gone over a little bit better with the fans had they done that.
Now, Gene's album was pretty poppy, if you think
about
it.
It was.
You know,
it is.
The lighter granny music.
Christine 16 was poppy.
Yeah, but, you know, there's only really one heavy song on there for me, which is Burning Up with Fever. Everything else is either pop-tinged or Beatles-infused and showing his diversity. I like the album. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's never been a favorite, though. It's always been, you know, probably my least favorite. Growing up when I was 14, I did not understand or get Peter Criss's album. It took a lot more living until it really grew on me. And it's one I listen to the most because it's my writing album. But the one I listened to most recently was Aces, which I hadn't listened to in a few weeks because I'm listening to it a lot at the moment. It's the Ace book. So it keeps me in the zone. So I don't think they're bad albums. I think they're misunderstood albums. People wanted to typecast all the members of Kiss and have 4 Kiss albums. And maybe even so to this day, where even Paul broke out of those confines with the god awful "Hold Me, Touch Me."
But you know, I think that Peter Criss's album has suffered with one thing all the time, is that that's an album that you appreciate the more you get older. I mean, back when I first got it, I couldn't stand it. I thought it was terrible. Now I appreciate it a lot more and can understand it better and appreciate it for what it's worth. And a few, like, let's say maybe 10 years back or so, I was dating this girl, and she was about 10 years younger than me. I had this younger girlfriend at the time. Oh, and I put it on because I had a copy of the Soul Records on there and put it on, and she looked at me and she's like, "What is this? Is something my grandfather would listen to." That was her exact words I go, "What?" And I go, it's Kiss, you know. She goes, "Yeah," but she goes, "This is terrible. This is like old man music." I go, "Okay." So I took it out and I put like Ace Frehley on, and that was much more to her liking. She liked Judas Priest and stuff like that. But that's the problem with that record, and I think it doesn't matter what the era is. Even if you play it to somebody young now, they're going to always think that that's kind of an old fart record until you get older and understand it. Unless you're like a soul R&B person, then you might actually listen to it and understand it. But I'm telling you, that's something that record, you have to give it time to appreciate it.
Then that relationship ended very quickly after she said that.
Not really. We were together for about 7 years or so. But
okay, surprise.
Are you going to kick her out of the car? right
down to that. No. If she would have said something about Rush, then that would happen. But
yeah. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so Bill Phelps makes a comment, "Jeans has too many female backing vocals." But Kiss had lots
Donna
of
Summer. Female
backing vocals. But Kiss was using backup vocalists on... they hired the Village People gang for Destroyer.
Oh, yeah.
Had them on. Rock and Roll Over had backing vocalists. Love Gun had backing vocalists. So...
Tomorrow and tonight.
There you go. It was just a part of it. Gene loved to get the backing vocalist into the demo studio with him as well. But maybe that's why he had too many of them. So there we go. So good topic, Podcast Rock City. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Other news this week, actually, is David Johansen, New York Dolls frontman, Buster Poindexter, to some stage 4 cancer, had a fall, and he's receiving care. I mean, that's without the Dolls, you don't have Kiss, you don't have Aerosmith, you don't have Guns N' Roses. You know, even though they were kind of media darlings and part of the zeitgeist of 72, 73, and part of the Warhol scene in New York, and never did much.
And
I've had a lot of conversations with David Krebs about the Dolls that they just could not project. They are still an American band. You know, you wouldn't have the Pistols. So, you know,
I saw him in concert in the 80s when he was going by Buster Poindexter. I think he opened it was in Oakland. I saw him open. I think he opened for, I want to say it was Pat Benatar. I'm pretty sure it's Pat Benatar. There's one with Pat Benatar. I don't know if Joan Jett opened for Pat Benatar too on that same one or not. But anyway, I've seen a lot of different artists. I'm wanting to go back through my old tickets and the tickets I still have, the stubs. I have a stack and figure out who, because I don't remember always the opening, the artists that opened a lot of them, but there was a lot of good artists. I mean, I had like Dokken and it just various, great bands actually that opened for other bands. I think I saw, Mark, I saw the first time I saw Rush in, I think it was 1980. I think 38 Special opened for them.
Oh, yeah. I think that was their first tour,
I think, or whatever. So, anyways, things like that. I need to go back and check out all the artists that I've actually seen that I forgot about.
Like, I mean, one show like that I would have loved to have seen, I saw that there was a time when Rush for Grace Under Pressure, they played like three nights at Radio City Music Hall in New York, and Marillion opened all three nights of that. Ooh. I would have loved to see that. But the problem was, I have a great documentary on Brilliant, and unfortunately, their memories of that was not very good. They actually got booed a couple of times that night by the Rush fans. They were really hardcore. But I found it really difficult to understand because Marillion were not like a complete, totally different thing to Rush. I mean, they had a lot of prog elements to it. Sure, it was a little bit more poppier than Rush was, but you know, they had a lot of prog elements in their music.
A lot stronger, yes. Who is it? Sensational Alex Harvey, kind of.
Yeah. I mean,
going into them than Rush. Rush started off as Zeppelin clones.
But I'm just saying that. But the audience, you know, that's the problem with the Rush audience is that they're very hardcore with that. When I saw them the first time, Red Ryder, Tom Cochran and Red Ryder opened for them, and they got booed off. Three songs in, they started throwing paper airplanes at them on stage, and they were out. They were gone by song four. So it's difficult to see. I think Rush finally clued in, decided, okay, we've got to like really step up our live opening acts, because they started getting like Mr. Big then, and they had they had Voivod open in Toronto when I saw them for Presto. That was really good. They had a lot of better bands start opening, so you got to be careful with that, man.
I couldn't believe I had to suffer through that opening band for Aerosmith concert. That darn Kiss? Guns N' Roses opened for them. Anyway, no, Guns N' Roses was great when they opened.
Was fantastic back then. Yeah. So you know, David Johansen, he did some stuff recently, or years ago, probably now, that ended up on Joe Perry's most recent solo albums, The Swaziland Manifesto, Mark One and Mark Two, and it's some really good stuff. Haberdasher Blues, I think it was. Can't remember. Not as familiar with that stuff. I've only listened to it about 80 times. So some very good stuff. All right. Moving on to Mark's favorite topic was one of our board posters posted up a What Bill or Coin thought of Destroyer at the time. And I'm going to dig into, let me see if I can find it quickly, Record World. And this was, Record World, August 1976.
August.
Bill O'Coin says, we found that we went against our philosophy a bit in trying to do something new, which I'm not against. I don't mind trying something new. I just think we went too far. You'll find that the next album, which is going to be produced by Eddie Kramer, is probably going closer to a rock album. Much, much stronger rock and roll. It's going to be closer to where Kiss really is, I think. Talk about backtracking. You put your head out there creatively, and then Bill O'Coin says that in August. And let me just read you what was in Record World the month before. Bob Ezrin is quoted as saying, Kiss, he states confidently, is right on time and ready to cross the line between becoming a regional phenomenon and becoming a national phenomenon. You were right, Bob. Because O'Coin then follows up his quote by saying, I think that Bob felt he was going to be the producer of Kiss. I think that we all did at the time. We just felt that we had gone too far. Yeah, he knew he'd gone too far when he was calling Jack Douglas to remix the damn thing, because they shit themselves after listening to it. Mark, we got to let you start with Destroyer. Did they go too far?
Absolutely. I mean, that's always been my big beef with this record. It doesn't sound anything like what people were expecting for a Kiss record. Now, this comes directly from my older sister, who was a longtime Kiss fan, still is a Kiss fan, and was there pretty much right from the beginning of the whole thing. And a lot of her friends were saying that, you know, what is this? You know, that they were not in for this sort of a record. And it was too polished. I mean, come on. I mean, okay, it didn't have to be, you know, ghetto sounding or terrible sounding or anything like that. But I mean, that sounded like way out of what people were expecting for Kiss. And, you know, you said that O'Coin put his neck out there, or I'm going to need something creative. The Kiss guys did the same thing. There was a great interview. I remember, I'm sure Julian must have heard this interview 100,000 times, but we're in some hotel and they were saying the same thing, that, oh, just you wait when we come up with our next record. It goes right back to our roots. They were dissing Destroyer in their own hotel room in an interview, you know, just saying that it was too much of a good thing, or maybe they should have waited to do it. You know, if they would have wanted to do something like that, I think they should have kind of eased the people in, like, introduce a few little elements of that in it and then work your way to it. I mean, it was just way too much, you know, the pianos and, you know, calliopes and this and that, and, you know,
choir.
Choirs and, you know, the orchestras and, you know,
kids.
tubular bells and all kinds of stuff. Like, I mean, it's just, it was way too much for a Kiss record at that time. You know, you're used to hearing, you know, just guitars, bass, and drums, and then it was like, wow, like, what the hell just happened, you know, with that. So I think they were right. I think that it was too much of a good thing. And like I said before, and I must clarify this, I don't have a problem with Ezrin when he does stuff with Pink Floyd. I don't have a problem with Ezrin when he does stuff with Alice Cooper, you know. But with Kiss, it just seems like he always shits the bed with them. The Elder wasn't good. I mean, the only record that I think that he did decent with was Revenge, you know. And I think by that point, he probably learned his lesson, you know, what was going on with this band. And, you know, still, I was going to say, oh, but Destroyer is the greatest selling record. Yeah, now it is. But at the time when it went out, people were, you know, they were concerned about it, you know. So that's what I think. Right. That's what
Before I let, you know, Ken counter you, was it simply a matter of too much too soon? Do you think it was too much of a quantum leap and that they could have gotten there, but by going there immediately, it was too much?
Yeah, I just said that. I said they would have introduced it a couple of parts at a time. I think Julian was probably reading when I said that. They would have put a couple of little new bits into the record at a time, like maybe introduce the tube bells and stuff like that at the end of, you know, Do You Love Me? And like kind of go, oh, what the hell is that? You know, and that's the only thing that kind of shocked the people. Okay, that's fine. Then maybe put the orchestra in the next record, you know, like, but they did everything. They just, like, you know, they just rolled over you with all this new stuff and totally different production, you know? So I think it was a shock to the system, I think.
All right, Ken.
Well, while it was a shock from...
That's right, Tatiana.
From Alive and then going right into Destroyer, which is a big shock. But looking back at it, we wouldn't have had the songs like, I mean, we would have had Detroit Rock City, but we wouldn't have had that middle part, the solo part. That was all constructed by Bob. The stuff with Beth, that probably wouldn't ever made an album, to tell you the truth. I doubt it would have ever made it to an album. And, you know, Shout It Out Loud, he co-wrote with, you know, Gene and Paul, I believe, Bob Ezrin. So there's so much he did for some good stuff. And plus picking, like, King of the Nighttime World as a cover. I mean, that was a great, just a great pull by him to say, hey, you guys should, you know, sing this song, try this. And it turns out to be one of their, you know, better songs that they've ever recorded. You know, it's a cool song. It sounds like Kiss. So from that standpoint, I think it was, I mean, it was a shock, but at the same time, we wouldn't have gotten a lot of the good stuff recorded the way, like, Detroit Rock City would have been totally different, and some other stuff we wouldn't have never gotten. Yeah, we wouldn't have some of the stuff at all. I guess the other thing is, what is it? I lost my train of thought. Whatever.
Choo choo.
No.
That thought has left the station.
I think I know. The thing with Bob Coyne, is, yeah, I wanted to know, and Julian, maybe you know this, when did Beth become a hit?
September.
Yeah, see, he was talking. That interview was before Beth became it. I'm sure the tune changed after that. All of a sudden, made the, you know, became a hit, and then it started selling. The record started selling again. They probably thought, oh, actually, it's not a bad album, and all of a sudden now it's, you know, Gene and Paul's favorite album of all time for Kiss. So,
yeah, I don't think it was too far. I think it has to be, because those songs, half of them would be great rock songs without all the embellishments on them, but they wouldn't exist without Bob Ezrin. You give Kiss Eddie Kramer in, you know, September 75, and you get Nightfly, you get Star, you get the the dance version of Detroit Rock City. I mean, go back and listen to the Destroyer box set and those Magnagraphic demos. They're, other than Burning Up with Fever in Detroit Rock City, that's a pile of crap. Mm. Which is why the vast majority of those parts aren't part of Destroyer. Because they went in and they took fresh ideas. They brought in ideas. And Bob Ezrin, who was it? Mr. Make-Believe, thank you. Yeah, it's equally a Bob Ezrin album. So that material, you don't have Beth in the form that it becomes a hit without Bob Ezrin and the piano. So I just don't see it. But yeah, I can't also comment on it because I wasn't a Black Leather and Silver fan of Kiss in their leather phase pre-76. And the shock to the system that that change in dynamic must have been. So did they go too far? Yeah, until you have a fucking hit and you become the superstars.
Yeah.
Which Bob thought they were going to do. So Bob obviously believed in it. And Bob had done it with Alice. So.
Yeah. So you have it.
All right. Jason Leonard's on fire today in the comments section. Thank you, Jason.
Yes.
All right. Last question from the board this week is an evening with Kiss. If Kiss got together with those convention like Q&As, I guess, and I didn't see who posted this thread, so I haven't seen what they actually were talking about. I'm just going from that title because why read the question when you can answer it any way you want anyway. What would you like in an evening of Kiss, and what would you be asking them? You only get one question. You're going to step up to that microphone once. You either are going to hit a home run or you're going to foul, strike out, and get sent back to your table. Mark.
Well, if I only get one question, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to really think about that, obviously, because, you know, you don't want to ask them something stupid about the makeup or something like that. They heard 100,000 times, right? I don't know what I would ask them, to be quite honest with you. But what I would want in that sort of a evening with Kiss, I mean, if it's just going to be a question and answer thing, I don't know if I'm really that interested in that, because you know how Kiss are. They never give you a full answer to anything. They're like politicians, those guys. They never give you a clear answer on anything, especially if it's something really important to talk about. But, you know, I've always been more of a fan of like the storyteller series that they did, where they played, performed stuff, and then in between, some MC guy will come out and say, "Okay, we got a question from the audience. You know, Edna from West Virginia, what do you think?" And they'll ask some questions. I think that's a much better thing. And considering that Kiss would probably charge, you know, like $1,000 a ticket just to go to this thing, I'm guessing that I would want a performance involved in this as well, because if it's just going to be them sitting there answering a bunch of questions, I wouldn't pay for that. You know, I mean, there's lots of interviews online that you can, you know, peruse, and, you know, somewhere on there, some answers will probably be given for questions, but I don't know. I don't think that that's a thing of interest to me. It may be of interest to people in the gallery here. It may be of interest to Ken or to Julian, but I mean, unless there's some sort of a performance going on, it ain't no interest to me.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, because they, half the time when they're asked questions, they don't know the answers anyway, because they were all busy living the life. So expecting them to, when some nerd comes up to them and says, "When you recorded the demo," they're like, "What demo? Who are you? I never heard of that song before." They were so busy living life. I've given up on having any of these sorts of things answered unless they happen to be monologuing about something and start telling stories. You know, back at the old days, you know, and suddenly something interesting slips out. I wouldn't actually go to a evening with Kiss evening these days, just because it's all been done. You know, just keep pumping out the box set and the off the soundboards, just keep authorizing it or whatever you guys do in the new relationship, and I'll be happy. So that's all I care about. Ken.
Yeah, but would you go if Ace and Peter joined Gene and Paul on stage? Would you join? You know, I would consider that for sure, if it was the classic Kiss lineup. And yeah, I don't know if they could do any music, you know, acoustically, if they wanted to practice a few songs just to do it, I don't know if that would happen. Probably, of course, not ever happen. But yeah, if in my world, yeah, I'd want it to happen, where they maybe rehearsed 10 songs acoustically and did them. Then they can talk about the past and stuff. Now maybe, I don't know, you would want to hear the good times, but I like, you know, Mark's idea about, you know, song stories, kind of that thing is, you know, what, you know, how did you come about writing this, or, you know, what was this from and what was the idea? But Kiss songs are not too deep in that way, so it's kind of hard to, I think, for them to explain what it's about. They're mostly about the same thing. Almost all of them are about girls, you know, women and that sort of thing. So I don't know how much they would do. I mean, it's not like a Rush song where, you know, Neil Peart, you know, is writing these wild, you know, lyrics and stories and things.
Well, vastly different at that too.
Right? Vastly, you know, so yeah. That would be something you can get, you know, interesting stuff out of. But for Kiss, I don't know if that would.
Yeah, Rodrigo, thank you. Yeah. They refuse to acknowledge their musical accomplishments and the value of that music. And I think talked a little bit about that last week, and it was a very sad thing to just be unable to recognize it other than a, you know, profit and loss statement or some line item, some unemotional, where it has a great deal of value to us. But again, Q&A sessions with the group are a nightmare. I was listening to Rockline from 2000, and people call up and, oh, why are you asking that? But then again, to that person, it's the most important question that they could think of at that time. And we sit there in judgment, laughing and mocking them sometimes. And then when someone does ask a question, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who's that? Vinnie Vincent, yeah. Gene. I'm sure you remember him. So,
but you know, that's funny though, that people like Kiss, somebody like Gene, who makes great effort to tell you that he doesn't drink or do drugs and stuff, and I believe him, that would have such a hard time remembering. I can understand Ace not remembering things, or Peter, Chris, or, you know, not remembering. But I mean, come on. I mean, I know that, sure, remembering something back in 74 might be a bit of a stretch, but I'm sure he could probably remember some things. I think the problem is more of what Rodrigo said. He just doesn't see any value in those sort of questions about the music. If you were to ask him, well, you know, what was his best merchandising decision he ever made, he'd probably talk 40 minutes about that with you. But anything about the music, he'd probably be like, oh, whatever, you know.
I miss Paul Speaks. That was a great segment on Brand Vault's Kiss Online that he would take questions from the fans, send them to Paul. Paul would type out his answers, and then they'd post up the questions and answers on the site. It was a really, really good feature because Paul could then pick and choose which ones he wanted to answer and which ones he would answer. And he clearly, you know, if you interview Paul, Paul stops and thinks before he answers. And he constructs that answer before he delivers it. So they are capable. Ace remembers stuff that would blow your mind. Same with Peter. So, you know, for any of them, again, I think fans have unrealistic expectations when it comes to, you know, interviews with these guys, especially now after many decades of life, you know, about how deep they are going to remember. You know, do you remember on November the 15th, 1975, I met you and I gave you a yellow daisy? No, I'm not going to remember any of that stuff. I think the best question would be, who is Sam Loomis?
Yeah.
Yeah. We still don't know.
That's the one thing people
still don't know. People want to know, who's Sam Loomis?
Yeah.
Yeah. The never-ending
thank you, Sam
search
Loomis.
For that answer.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. All right. Who's this? All right. Where's Drago? Since you're late to the show, let's put an old girl rock band from the 70s. And they couldn't remember supporting Ike and Tina Turner. Yeah. No, it is like that, you know. I mean, I what was it? There was a show ad for Peter's band, Sounds of Soul, in, I think, D.C., you know, do you think they're going to remember that from like 1968?
Well, no, I mean, that's I just mean a little bit more recently, like maybe like, you know, 80 or 81 or 82. Maybe they, I would like to think they could still remember that, but not 68 or something like that. I mean, come on.
Yeah, lots of good stuff. The guitar copy of the Firebird, and that was the Clapton one with the tuning pegs from his farewell tour in like 68. I can't remember details off the top of my head with that, but yeah, lots of cool stuff. All right. That's a little bit of a shorter episode this week. Some topics from the board. The KISS FAQ, you're able to read it without registering, which is what makes it wonderful. I want to thank all the participants on the message board who do generate a lot of the topics that we do talk about, because you guys come up with great stuff. For those who wonder, what are we going to talk about this week? We've always got the message board to fall back on if I don't have a topic prepared. And it really remains a fertile ground. There's a lot of great stuff going on there with these discussions at the moment, so do check it out. Register and join in if you want to be a participant in those conversations. At the board, Facebook, there's lots of places to still talk about KISS. We are not done. I'm not going to say we're just getting started, but we are not done by a long shot. All right, I think that's it. I'm going to grab some dinner. So thank you to everyone who's chimed in with your comments today and joined us live for this episode. We will be back on Saturday. We're going to start fluctuating between the two, depending on my schedule. But we'll be back on the following Saturday. Yeah, the 22nd, I think it is, so that we can have Daniel participate and hopefully Lonnie too, schedules permitting. So for now, from the crew at the KISS FAQ, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.